Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5pm on newstalk.com or the News Talk app powered by Go Loud, and it's on the radio every Saturday at 6pm here on News Talk. Now we're doing something slightly different this week. One of our famed themed shows, and the theme is this.
But what about us?
We'll always have Paris. We didn't have, we lost it until you came to Casablanca. We got it back last night.
When I said I would never leave you.
And you never will.
Yes, that was, of course, the great Humphrey Bogart and the equally great Ingrid Bergman from Casablanca saying goodbye. Yes, we're talking about the best breakup movies of all time. And why are we doing that? Well, my wife left me this morning. No, I'm joking. That's a Robin Williams joke. I'm doing it because I thought it would be great fun. It is the August Bank Holiday weekend. Those voices you hear in the background are faithful contributors on this show in the form of arts journalist and film critic Chris Wasser. And also arts journalist and, of course, book writer. She writes books, Social Capital being the first and most important one. Aoife Barry. Hello, guys. You're both very welcome.
Hello, John. Thank you for having me.
Neither with three people? No, whatever the correct grammarian terror is. None of us chose.
Sorry, I feel like I'm constantly correcting
you. You wait till you're spoken to, please.
I know, yeah, sorry.
No, but none of us chose Casablanca as one of our favourite breakup movies. And we probably should have, right?
I mean, there were no rules at the beginning of this, John.
No, that's true.
But it is quite shocking that none of us actually picked it.
Did we all? I think I felt like we all thought one of the other people would pick it.
Yeah.
That's how we ended up not picking it.
Maybe that was it.
One of the guys pick it.
Or also maybe just because it's one of the greatest movies ever made. You don't actually think that it's, you know, a breakup movie necessarily, because there's a lot of love in it. But it is very much a breakup movie. Now, do join the conversation. John_Fardy is my Twitter handle, or you can email us, screentime@newstalk.com, to let us know your favourite breakup movies. Aoife, I'm going to start with you. I don't know why I would say ladies first, but you can't say that stuff anymore. But let's go with The Worst Person in the World.
Yes, so
which I haven't seen. I'm sorry to say,
such a treat.
I know,
oh my
and
God.
It's Swedish, right?
It's set in Norway.
Sorry,
it's part of the Oslo trilogy by this director Joachim Trier.
Is he anything to Lars von Trier?
No, he's not related to Lars von Trier. I'm keeping afraid I'll call him Joachim von Trier at some point during this. So there's no body parts being cut off or no, you know, strange kind of porno scenes or anything in it. So this came
or
out,
odd. Press conferences we have to reference.
He hasn't said anything about any, you know, historical
figures. I'll stop interrupting you now.
No, you're fine. I just love this film so much. And I went back and watched some of it again like a couple of days ago, just wondering if I had, you know, that thing where you watch something, it's perfection.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I'm afraid, but it still stands up. It's about a girl called Julie, or Julia, as they call her in Oslo. We meet her when she's a medical student. She very quickly, we discover over voiceover, changes her mind about being a medical student, decides she wants to be a psychologist, then decides she wants to be a photographer. After she becomes a photographer, she meets an older cartoonist played by Andreas Danielsson Lai, who is called Axel. And actually, that actor is a doctor in real life as well, too. A doctor and an actor.
Wow.
The two of them fall in love and we follow their love affair. And at one point, she does break up with him. Sorry, spoiler alert. But it's because she gets involved with another character who she bumps into at a party. And they have this incredible scene where they're like testing the boundaries of what they can do without it being cheating.
That whole chestnut. So we could just hold each other with our clothes on.
That is literally what they do. They do even more than that. But yeah, so this film is essentially both like an adult coming of age story and the story of what it's like to fall deeply in love with someone who's got a big age gap in the relationship between the two of you, and figuring out what you want in life and figuring out what Julie wants in life. And by the end of it, I'm not going to spoil the end of it, but the last kind of few scenes, the very end of it is just like so heartbreaking. And I think, you know, if you're someone in like your, you know, late 30s, like older than 35, into your 40s, you'll really have your heart broken by a lot of what the characters talk about when they talk about like the meaning of life and, you know, your love of culture. So I just really fell for the characters in it, even though I think it's like an imperfect film in some ways. I think like it's a male perspective on a woman's life, but it's powerful, it's moving, it's technically really interesting. There's a slow motion scene where everybody's actually frozen in real life. They're not digitally frozen. They just stand there frozen while Julie travels around them. So all of which to say, you get a breakup, you get a love story, you get a coming of age story, and it's really beautiful film as well too. It looks beautiful.
And soundtrack. Stood up when you rewatched it, and it wasn't just the more youthful time you'd watched it. Even though you're still very young.
Oh, I wish. Yeah, no, it really does. I mean, I don't know. Have you seen it, Chris?
I haven't. No. I feel like John.
I'm excited
and I
for you.
Should leave the room.
No. I'm excited for you to watch it because I really would recommend. Like, I haven't seen Reprise, which is the first of the trilogy, but I've seen Oslo, August 31st, which is the one that came before this film.
Yeah.
Again, like, I just think that Joachim Trier is really good at like getting into all these questions about what it's like to be a human, you know, what it's like to grow up, what it's like to go through life, making mistakes, being an idiot, messing up. And I love those kind of films where the people, the protagonists, mess up a lot.
Absolutely. And for the purposes of this show, just to restate it, but that the breakup is quite heartbreaking in it.
It's so heartbreaking because I think so many people watching it will have had some sort of experience around that where they're like, you know, pulled towards somebody else, whether it's like a friendship or relationship thing where you're kind of pulled towards somebody and you're like, oh no, I'm in this situation. Do I need to move out of it? And I think it really captures that sense of like breaking out of something. But also you kind of feel a bit annoyed at her because you're like, they did have this really lovely relationship. Mm-hmm. And then you start assessing the boyfriend and thinking, well, he is 15 years older and he does want this and she wants that. So it feels very real what they go through, and I think that is why it's such an impactful film. It doesn't feel fantastical in any way.
Well, that sounds terrific. Aoife Barry is talking about the worst person in the world, and I should mention often on these theme shows there will be spoilers, so please no emails going, oh, I can't believe they broke up. It's a show all about the best breakup movies. Now, Chris, we're going to share our first choice. Let's hope it doesn't cause a breakup or something like that. Take a listen to John Cusack.
What did Laura mean last night when she said, I haven't slept with him yet. Yet. What does yet mean anyway? It means you're gonna do it, doesn't it? Or does it? Just come on. What would it mean to you, that sentence? I haven't seen Evil Dead 2 yet.
Well, to me it would mean that you're a liar. You've seen it twice. Once with Laura, oops. And once with me and Dick, remember? We had that conversation about the guy making Beretta shotgun ammo off screen in the 14th century.
Right, all right, but let's just say that I hadn't seen it. And I said to you, I haven't seen Evil Dead 2 yet. What would you think?
I'd think that you're a cinematic idiot and I'd feel sorry for you.
All right. But from that one sentence, would you think that I was going to see it?
I'm sorry, Rob, I'm struggling here. You're asking me what would I think if you told me you hadn't seen a film that you have already seen. What am I supposed to say?
Just listen to me. If I said to you,
I haven't seen Evil Dead 2 yet, yes.
Would you get the impression that I really wanted to see it?
Well, you couldn't have been desperate to see it, otherwise you'd have already gone.
Yes, John Cusack there, wondering if his ex has slept with Tim Robbins yet. Yet being the key word. For people don't know, this is High Fidelity, John Cusack reprising the role that Nick Hornby wrote. The action has moved to Chicago. It was my number one choice, but Chris is a guest, so I let him go for it. Chris, why is this such a great breakup movie? I know, but tell our listeners.
Yeah, and it's so odd that John Cusack was actually involved in the writing process for this as well. There were a group of them, and they transported the story of Rob, this record store owner who's going through a breakup, and then also decides to examine his top five breakups in the process, because that's how much this Laura person meant to him. They moved the action from the UK to the US, and I actually, it's one of those cases where, you know, did the story really need that? I think it worked. I think it worked a lot because it allowed, you know, American actors like Jack Black and actually Tim Robbins to enter the story, and they do so much here. Rob on paper is a bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, he's so selfish, he's so neurotic, narcissistic,
and a music snob.
A real music snob. He runs a place called Championship Vinyl, and I don't know how these guys make money, because
I don't think they do.
One of the best scenes in the film is Jack Black's character literally, you know, kind of chasing a customer out of the shop.
Who wants Lionel Richie?
They want them. I think, was it Lionel Richie in the book? But then he wants Stevie Wonder's I Just Called to Say
Hello.
And he's like, no, go to the mall for that crap.
Yeah.
But yeah, runs a record shop, doesn't make all that much money. At the beginning of the film, we see the breakup is right at the very beginning. You know, Rob is depressed in his apartment, has his headphones on. His girlfriend, Robin, played by Ibn Hijeli, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, she is in the process of leaving. And we think, well, that, you know, is that going to be the end of that? It's not, because she's sort of, she is the one. And she's the love of his life, and he can't get over. And he says, you know, at the beginning, you know, you are one of the top five breakups. And but this keeps happening to him. So he decides to call up all of his ex-girlfriends to see, what is the problem with me? What is the problem with me in a relationship? Why does this keep happening? And learns a lot about himself. Now, again, sounds like a bit of an ass, but Cusack kind of, he finds the charm in Rob. He makes him likable. And I mean, there's also, there's this idea throughout the film too, that, you know, the is it Dick and Barry, like, that they came for to work in the
his
record
shop?
Yeah, his colleagues. They came to work in Championship Final for 3 days a week, and then he couldn't get rid of them. All of a sudden it was a full-time position. And you're kind of led to believe that it's because these guys love music so much and because they have nowhere else to go. And then as the film progresses, you realise, no, they actually love Rob. And there's a reason why Rob keeps, you know, Rob has had so many girlfriends and so many friends because he is quite charming. You know, he is quite likable. He is quite cool. So it's a weird performance in Cusack where you're constantly thinking to yourself, oh, get over yourself. But also you feel so sorry for him because he is heartbroken by this relationship, you know, breakup. It's totally his fault, John.
Yeah.
But you do feel
And he's also
for him.
Been pretty horrible to some previous exes as well.
Really horrible. Yeah. Dumping girlfriends because it never really goes anywhere in terms of, you know, the physical department. Which is just, it makes him sound like such, not the kind of person you should be rooting for, but for some reason there is charm in his performance. And you
and
are.
There may be a bit, without giving a spoiler, but there's redemption. He finds, he improves a bit as a human being. Aoife, you mentioned, you know, the previous movie being from a male view. This is a very much a guy's movie, I suppose. I mean, Bruce Springsteen's in there in a cameo, so how much more male can you get? Although he's a Renaissance man.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going down a rabbit hole. What do you think of High Fidelity?
Yeah, I remember the last time I watched it was literally around 2000 when it came out.
Okay.
So I went back and kind of refamiliarized myself because I remember reading Nick Hornby's books, most of the books around that stage. And what, now I'm a total music nerd. And so the music snobbery of it, unfortunately, I am a music snob and certainly was back in 2000, even worse than I am now. So I think I really liked that element of it. I didn't particularly like him very much, but I do always think about Nick Hornby writing men who had like the sense that they wanted to look into their lives. They wanted to be introspective. They wanted to be emotional. And I think he kicked off a real, you know, sense of this new man in the 2000s who could be like, okay, I am breaking up with women. Why am I doing that? And it's self-reflective. And I really loved, and my mom is a huge Nick Hornby fan. Like, we loved reading his books because as women, you were connecting to these male characters and what they went through. So yeah, I can't wait to go back and rewatch the film again because like, I love all the in-jokes, the music jokes and stuff, even though they're really mean to people who are into.
And we did also have Jack Black singing fantastic Marvin Gaye at the end.
It's a wonderful performance by Jack
He's
Black.
Great.
That moment when he walks into the record store for the first time, you know, and he doesn't know that Rob and Laura have broken up, and he's brought along, was it, what's that?
I'm walking on sunshine.
Yeah. And it's just,
Tune
on the Waves, and it's just fireworks go off. It's the best Jack Black has ever been. He's kind of been repeating himself ever since. One thing that this film does really well that annoys me about other similar films is the breaking of the fourth wall, the constant narration, the constant explaining what's going on. For some reason, it works in this because I feel like Cusack is almost channeling like Michael Caine and Alfie. This idea of like, what's it all about? Well, tell us.
Yeah.
Invite us in because there is so much more to Rob than what you get on the surface. And I like that Cusack is explaining, you know, the whole thought process behind this guy again that you shouldn't like, but you do.
That's a good analogy, the Alfie one, actually. Yeah. The other thing is Nick Hornby apparently was almost bowled over by how faithful it was, despite the fact that it moved to Chicago. He thought at times he was almost reading from the book. So it was one of those where fans of the book were also happy with the movie. You know?
I'm not sure if I called Nick Hornby Nick Hornsby as in Bruce Hornsby on the ring a minute ago. If I did,
that's your music snobbery coming in.
Sorry about that.
That's just the way it is, Aoife, you know?
Some things will never change. And sure, Nick Hornby's a brilliant scriptwriter as well. He's written so many great scripts. So it's like, I think he's a real gift for a story that like can transfer from the UK to US really easily because it's almost like in every person, every man story. So
Well, that's mine and Chris's first choice, High Fidelity. Aoife, before we go to the ad break, let's take your second choice, complete with some music.
And don't tell me what to do, and don't tell me what to say, and when I go out with you, don't put me on display.
Pretty good.
You remember. You don't own me. Don't try to change me in any way. You don't own me.
That was Diane Keaton, Bette Midler, and of course Goldie Hawn singing in the First Wives Club. Now, Aoife, to my mind, I don't think I've seen this, like you were saying, since it came out.
In 96.
Yeah. So Why is this in your list as one of the best breakup movies of all time? Maybe the clue's in the title, but
it's just like, it's so funny. I rewatched it, I think last year, because my sister Laura really loves this film, and I think we must be talking about it, and I rewatched it and I was just like, this is just such a classic 90s, you know, kind of empowered women, but quite a camp film, you know, it's really over the top. The characters at that time, I mean, they're icons now, but it was really great to see those three women together in those roles. They really kind of amp up what they were known for at the time. Like, Diane Keaton is this quite like a nervy, uptight woman whose husband's treating her terribly. You know, you have Bette Midler, who is, you know, they mock her over her weight all the time in it, even though she's like tiny, but that was a real trope, unfortunately, with her. And she's this big kind of loud woman whose husband broke up with her and starts going out effectively a teenager. And then you have Goldie Hawn, who's making fun of the kind of attitude around her as this, you know, starlet who's having all this work done and looks impossibly glamorous. Again, her husband also breaks up with her. So you have them playing these three women, these icons, playing these women whose husbands do them wrong. And then they all come together because their friend, who's played by Stockard Channing, of all people,
another
icon, has taken her life, and it makes them realise and wake up, life is short, we've been treated badly, you know, we won't so much get revenge, we'll get justice. And they go on this quest to bring their husbands down, and it's just really fun. I mean, it's, yeah, is there a tiny bit of like cliche or kind of gender cliches in it? Totally. But is there a load of crack? Absolutely. Yeah. Sarah Jessica Parker playing a version of Carrie who's really like terrible, but really funny. Dame Maggie Smith is there too.
God, I've forgotten all
like,
this.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe when I watched it back. I was like, oh my God, this is iconic. It's so much fun. And there's two great scenes in it. One is when the three women sneak into an apartment, and then they think they're going to get caught by, I think Victor Garber plays one of their husbands. And they end up going onto this, you know, what the window washer would be on in a skyscraper, you know, and that ends up falling down multiple stories, and they just think they're going to die, and it's just so funny. And then there's a scene where they sing You Don't Own Me. Like, it's a real girl power film.
Yeah.
This is also Spice Girls era, when you think about it as well too. So it is kind of giving women their moment in the sun. And Ivana Trump makes a special appearance and says, I think she says like, don't get mad, get even, or something like that. So it's really knowing.
Wow. So, that contains multitudes when you think back on it now.
Yeah.
And I suppose even at that stage, the three ladies had been around a while.
Yeah.
So there was such powerful casting in those strong women who'd lived to tell a tale or two as well.
Yeah, they did. And like, it's a comedy, so like, it's really funny. They get to make fun of themselves. There's this really funny line from Goldie Hawn, I think, where she basically says something like, you know, female actors get to be like a babe, a district attorney, and then Driving Miss Daisy. You know, that's all you could be when you're, you know, an actor or a female actor in Hollywood. So they get to poke fun at things. And I think as a viewer, you get to have a lot of crack watching them.
Yeah.
And there is that sense of like, yes, they got justice on their terrible husbands. So yeah, I mean, I watched it very, very quickly. I watched an interview with Goldie Hawn about it, and it's worth going back and watching some of the old press, because she's being interviewed about herself, and she makes the interviewer drink some of her green juice that she drank at the time. So she really kind of leaned into the character as well. She's very similar to her kind of a little bit self-absorbed character in the film. So
I'm going to have to rewatch that. I'm salivating at the memory of that now. Yeah, I think I'm remembering a different movie almost. Anyway, that is First Wives Club, as chosen by Aoife Barry, in our list of the best breakup movies of all time. Do let us know. Screentime@newstalk.com if you'd like to nominate any. I'm in studio with the aforementioned Aoife Barry and also Chris Wasser. We'll take a quick ad break and return with lots more after the break. Now, you're welcome back to Screen Time, News Talk's TV and movie show. We're doing one of our special shows this week where we're looking at the best breakup movies of all time. So far, we've been talking about things like High Fidelity, The Worst Person in the World, and First Wives Club. Chris is going to bring us on a downer now with a great movie, though. Chris, Marriage Story from 2 years ago.
Oh, 2 years ago? I think it was maybe 2019. I think this is pre-COVID.
Are you serious?
Time doesn't make any sense.
Wow. I'm way off.
That's 2019.
When you throw a pandemic in, just we'll remove that. 2 years ago, let's go with
that's
that.
Safe.
That's incredible.
I mean, is this film, I was thinking about this on the way in, is this film autobiographical? A little bit. Noah Baumbach had to answer a lot of questions about that aspect at the time of its release, because everyone said, well, Noah Baumbach was, you know, married before he met Greta Gerwig, who he now makes films with. Is this film about his divorce from Jennifer Jason Leigh? It is and it isn't. He was informed by his own parents' divorce, by this, by the fact that a lot of his friends around that time were getting a divorce. And I think maybe a lot of people too were saying, oh, this is probably unfair for Jennifer Jason Leigh. But he said that she actually, you know, looked at parts of the screenplay and that he showed her parts of the film while it was being made. So yeah, it's impossible to make something like this if you've gone through it without it being autobiographical. There is a great story here. Wonderful performances from Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson playing Charlie and Nicole. He is an esteemed theatre director who's kind of, you know, hogged all of the attention in their professional lives, but also in their partnership. And she has been something of a muse for him, you know, never really fulfilling her full potential because she was always kind of, you know, in his shadow. But at the very beginning of the film, they are going to see a mediator. Things are obviously not great between them. And he thinks that, you know, this is just a bumpy, you know, this is just a bump, rough patch, you know, we'll get through this. But she wants to leave. She wants to, they live in New York. They have a child. Nicole wants to go to California to resume her career as a television actress because that's where she starts. She wants to get away from Charlie and away from just his selfishness too, because it's all about him. He has a new play opening on Broadway, and I think he's like going to receive the MacArthur Prize too. So there's an awful lot of money and acclaim coming in. But if a divorce happens, they're going to have to be going back and forth and also fighting over the custody of their kid. Despite the fact that you did say it is a bit of a downer, it is quite funny at times.
No, it's true. It is hilarious. It's being humorous.
Yeah, there's a very funny sequence where I think Charlie has the kid for Halloween and, you know, he's not wearing the right outfit. They go trick-or-treating too late. They have to, you know, wandering around Los Angeles on foot, which is not something that you do, you know, knocking on doors after 10 o'clock looking for candy. But it is also heartbreaking. Everyone always really looks at that scene in the apartment with that Charlie boys in Los Angeles where the two of them finally just tell one another how they feel and how they felt about getting married in the first place, about how they feel now, you know, because they're really in the thick of it. She has hired this, you know, a ruthless divorce lawyer played by Laura Dern. He's hired this nasty divorce lawyer played by Ray Liotta in one of his final film roles. And it's just become so messy, so expensive, so unnecessary. And they just tell each other how they feel. And I think Noah Baumbach was saying that after that scene, they had wine and beer on the sideline for that scene because they knew this is going to take an awful lot out of them. And when they finished, they all just sat around and they cried and they hugged and they laughed about it. I think it's very good at conveying just the messiness. You know, I unfortunately have first-hand experience of a divorce, and it is very, very good at showing you how messy a breakup can be in a marriage when other people have to get involved, when a solicitor, when a lawyer has to get involved. And that is just inherently odd and awkward, and I think Noah Baumbach shows us that so well, and also locates the awkward humour in that, because you do at one stage have Alan Alda playing this divorce lawyer who wants everything to be civil between Charlie and Nicole, but unfortunately that just can't happen. So it's wonderful performances, great naturalistic screenplay. I think it's probably Noah Baumbach's best film.
Yeah, even better than The Squid and the Whale.
I think so, yeah. Okay. I think that one was about his parents' divorce.
It is a great film, despite what I said about it. And those gnarled roots of being together and extricating yourself from a long-term relationship and having a child involved. It's hard to watch at times. Aoife, have you seen it?
I have, yeah, and I really loved it as well. Yeah. And like, you know, I really resonated with The Squid and The Whale, his movie, because my parents are divorced. And, you know, that idea of then seeing the adult's version of that and what adults go through, I think is so powerful.
Yeah.
And I think it's really like, you know, it's a very Hollywood story in a way about like a woman whose, you know, desire for her career is thwarted by a husband whose ego is bigger than anybody can handle. But it's very real at the same time of that thing of you know, when you get into a relationship and mesh your life, especially if you have a child, and that idea of having to untangle everything and maybe at points being like, was I right to untangle to even start this process? Like the ball of wool is there and I'm pulling from it and I don't know if I will get to the end. So yeah, I really loved it. And there's a really lovely Stephen Sondheim song that Adam Driver sings in it that I can't remember the name of it. It's not in my head, but I loved that moment as well. I thought that was a really like cathartic, beautiful moment, and it brought in that level of creativity and you know, American kind of stage and screen you know, into it as well too. So yeah.
Yeah, it's terrific. It was made for Netflix. I remember it was one of the first at the time was getting a small cinema release and then went straight to the streamer. But it was nominated for Oscars and all. That was around the start when they started doing that, realizing we have to show these in cinemas if we're going to get Oscar contention.
Yeah. I think it was nominated for maybe 5-6 Oscars. Yeah. Definitely for Driver, for Baumbach, for Johansson. I think Johansson actually had 2 acting Oscar nominations that year. And also another breakup film that's very good at explaining itself, because like a lot of the films that we're talking about here, they all start with the breakup and the audience is sitting there wondering, what went wrong? And it's like, just wait, just be patient, and through their arguments you'll learn what went wrong. Very good.
You can't help but think of maybe it's its antecedent, but Kramer versus Kramer, which is a very similar movie with Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep, and they have a child together. And in terms of a relationship being horribly sad when it breaks up, in a way, they feel like companion pieces. Have you both seen Kramer versus Kramer?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think if you look at the two, and it's been ages since I've seen Kramer versus Kramer, but I remember tearing my heart out. Like, but you know, God, Meryl Streep, Dustin Hoffman, I mean, she's like amazing. But that, I think if you looked at the roles of the couple in it, compared the 70s to now and what their kind of roles were in society and that idea of what you're allowed to be like as a parent, as a man or a woman, and career-wise, I think it'd be really interesting to compare and contrast those two. But like, there's no way of making a film about a divorce when you, especially when you have kids, that's not going to tear at the heart of people watching it and make you really feel for them.
Yeah, Kramer versus Kramer really tears at the heart. And I'm going to spoil it, but when Meryl Streep shows up and basically says, "You can keep the kid," it's just heartbreaking.
And very unusual. Absolutely. Very unusual at that period of time too.
I think it was because Kramer versus Kramer revolves around the idea of how this will affect the kid, and we see how it affects the child in that film. There's not as much of that in Marriage Story.
No,
in
fact,
it's something of a punchline at times, where the kid is almost a little bit like, "Look, I'll leave you guys to it.
You two children are arguing over here.
Yeah. And then come back to me and we'll have ice cream."
We are looking at some of the best breakup movies of all time. I'm going to go with one of my choices now, and I rewatched this to make sure I wasn't in some kind of fugue state when I saw it 2 years ago, because I said it was the best movie of the year before last. I'm talking about Past Lives, which mightn't always come to people's mind as a breakup movie. Unfortunately, not as many people have seen it as they should. Aoife's happy I've chosen this, I can tell.
My favourite film that year, I think.
Yes, mine too. No, we can all weigh in this, but for people who don't know, this is by a great, well, I think it was her first time feature. She wrote and directed Celine Song, about these two kids. I think they're 11 or 12 in high school in South Korea, played, when they're adults, they're played by Greta Lee and T.O., both Korean actors. Well, Greta Lee is Korean-American. And they're friends when they're 11, and they're really close pals in an almost certainly a pre-sexualized kind of way, or it's just the beginnings of that. Then it turns out Greta's character has to go off to America. She goes off, he stays in South Korea. They catch up 10 years later on Zoom and definitely have flirtations and stuff like that. Nothing comes of it. She goes off to a writer's retreat, meets her new-to-be husband. Then they meet up 10 years later when Tao comes to comes to America. So this is over 20 years. They've never been together. The meat and potatoes of the movie, I suppose, is when they finally meet as adults. She's now married, and they spend a kind of long weekend in New York. And I won't spoil it, but talking about what might have been, and there's a beautiful scene in it where there are three of them are out together, because it's a love triangle of sorts, and they're out at dinner, or they're in a bar, and he's trying to talk in English and vice versa, and he just gives up on it and addresses her and kind of says, "This is a brief glimpse of the life we could have had." The last scene, I won't say what happens. If I keep talking, I'm going to well up. It just stays with me. And the last thing I'll say, and I'll let Aoife in, is if you had to teach a gang of 15-year-olds about why movie making is an art form, you should show them this film, because it's not pretentious at all, but there are little things in it where you go, that's how you use a camera. So when she goes off for the last time from South Korea, I don't know how they found it, but there's these two sets of steps, one going up, one going down, and you just see them walk off and the camera lingers on them. When he's in New York, they give him a suitcase and he's wandering around New York. You know, we have this image of New York, the Big Apple and all that stuff. He's miserably lonely waiting for her to show up. He has this suitcase. He's going up and down escalators, eating crappy takeaway food with long, rainy scenes. It is a work of art. That's a pretentious thing to say. And it's a heartbreaking breakup movie. If it is even a breakup movie. Aoife, you love it, I gather.
Yeah, I felt the exact same. Like, it's just so beautiful. And I felt like I watch it and the setting is so vibrant that I'm like, I wanted to go to Seoul in Korea immediately, and I wanted to go to New York then straight away after that. Like, it's so grounded in where it is. But what I really loved about it is, I think something that viewers and readers really like is yearning. Like, we want to see people yearn for something and not know if they're going to get it. And the whole time you're watching it thinking, this woman has this incredible long-term relationship with a man that's beautiful. But what if with this other guy? You know, there's all this unresolved emotion that, like, really hit me. And that's why I was surprised to see The Materialists' Celine Song's follow-up, which just came out this year, which is about something a lot more surface than this.
I haven't seen that yet.
I haven't either. I actually couldn't even... I feel like
it's not getting great reviews, unfortunately.
I'm working my way up to eventually watching it, but I just know it won't have that depth of emotion. I don't know. Did you feel the same, Chris? You're nodding away. You loved it as well.
I haven't seen Materialists yet, and I am a little bit worried about that, but I loved Past Lives. Yeah. And I think there comes a certain point in Past Lives where you actually start thinking about all your own little maybe what-ifs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not just even in relationships, but in friendships along the way. And
Because there's a fine line between are these guys friends or possible lovers?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's tragic. It is very funny at times. I think is it John Margaret playing?
Yeah.
He could
have been a stock character and he's not.
His character deserves the award for the most, the most supportive husband
and possible cuckold of all time.
I love that line in the apartment where he's just learning about this friendship for the first time and realizing that, you know, okay, this guy's going to be coming in this weekend and staying with us. You know, is he handsome? And she answers slowly.
Yeah.
And you just think to yourself, how are you still standing here? Yeah, you know, it's a wonderful performance. Yeah, it's a beautiful film.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you agree. And I want people to know about it because still lots of people haven't seen it. It's no longer on Netflix, I'm afraid, because I checked. But seek it out. It is a beautiful, beautiful movie. If you've just tuned in, we're talking about the best breakup movies of all time. I'm with Aoife Barrie and Chris Wasser. Time is flying. We do have one more part. And we will take one more part. That sounds really exciting. Come back for the next part. But we will be discussing more breakup movies after the break. Now, you're welcome back to the last part of Screen Time. We're talking about the best breakup movies of all time. Screen Time at newstalk.com. If you want to join the conversation, I'm in studio with Aoife Barrie and Chris Wasser. Aoife, we go to your, well, kind of final choice. Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah, like this came out in 2017. I was absolutely obsessed with it at the time. Were you obsessed with it?
Oh, yeah. I bought the album and everything.
Me too, I have it at home, exactly. I mean, I listened to it, so it's so good. Anyway, we'll get onto a conversation about that another time. This was a film that, like, The Lighthouse, I think The Lighthouse is one of the cinemas that, like, played it the most out of every cinema at The Lighthouse in Dublin. It broke records. People just got absolutely obsessed with it. And then things went downhill because the two stars of it are Timothée Chalamet. It made a big star out of Timothée Chalamet and Armie Hammer. And we all know, if we've been paying attention, that Armie Hammer's career went massively downhill. It's kind of like, do not mention his name in polite company anymore. But all that to say, let's go back to 2017 and to why this is such an amazing film. It's set in Northern Italy in 1983. Luca Guadagnino is the director, and it also kicked off the rest of his, you know, massive career, even though he had made a few movies up to that point. Timothée Chalamet plays Elio, a young teenager living in Northern Italy. His parents take in a lodger who's a student, kind of graduate student from America, called Oliver, played by Armie Hammer. He's 24, and over a beautifully hazy summer period, the two men fall in love. And it's very kind of, you know, erotic without showing anything, this kind of sensual movie about what could have been. By the end of it, poor Elio is gazing into the fire while Sufjan Stevens plays a heartbreaking song in the background on the soundtrack, and you know, you're thinking about the connection that these two young people had. It's so beautifully shot. It's just stunning. There's even really beautiful touches, like when the kind of, is it like called interstitial kind of writing comes up where it tells you, like, somewhere in Northern Italy, 1980, wherever. It's like written in beautiful handwriting. You feel the, like, personal touches. They both play their roles so beautifully. And, you know, on reflection, maybe a 17-year-old boy, 24-year-old man, there are many questions we could ask about the nature of their relationship there. It is one of those things where you get absorbed in the relationship and you love them and you love, you know, their parents. It's so interesting. They're really intellectual. There's all these, like, classical, you know, history and literature running through it. You kind of forget all of these questions, I think, as you watch it. So, yeah, it's a pity that Armie Hammer's career then went down the toilet after this, because he was pretty great in this, and Timothy Chalamet was just stunning. But yeah, it's gorgeous. Mm.
And it doesn't end well, hence its inclusion in the breakup. It was a doomed love affair from the start. Yeah.
And the thing is, I think we know that from the beginning. Yeah. We know there's no way these two guys are going to end up together, really, but you want them to. And the title of the film, Call Me By Your Name, plays a beautiful role at the end of it. And, you know, it's all again about yearning, about wanting something can't have. So it's so beautiful. And, you know, there's a lot of press around it at the time. That's well worth looking back at about different scenes and stuff like that. But yeah, great film. Great soundtrack.
Chris, you're a fan?
Oh, big fan. Yeah, I went out and got the novel afterwards, the soundtrack. Yeah. I've lost count of the number of times I've watched it. I've actually gone to where it was filmed.
It's beautiful.
Where was it filmed?
Beautiful. I'm getting the name of the town wrong now. I want to say Sardinia.
Sardinia?
What's the name of the town?
But there's another, I can't remember the name of the specific town. Yeah
there I am saying I'm
gorgeous.
Obsessed with the film, and now I can't remember the town where it was.
You're overtaken with obsession, you just can't remember.
I do love it. Yeah, it's also a great holiday romance film, and obviously, you know, sometimes those romances don't last. And also lovely stuff from Michael Stuhlbarg, who is involved in this beautiful bursting of the bubble where I think Elio, he thinks that this is his private thing. This is his own thing for the summer, because, you know, he's so involved with his parents' life, they know everything about him. I just want this for myself. And then at the end, Stuhlbarg's father character, he sees that, you know, his child is heartbroken, and he lets his son know, I know what happened between you guys, and I want to tell you something. I'm envious of it, because I don't even have that with your mother. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And what a speech, but also what a dad to be so supportive and loving like that. Gorgeous film.
I wasn't the greatest fan, so we'll just move on. I feel terrible when you present it that way. My memory of it was hearing all the hype and seeing it and going, I don't know, I found it all a bit slow. But anyway, do let us know if I'm completely in the wrong. Screentime@newstalk.com is the email address. Chris, en route to your final choice, I just want to quickly mention Forgetting Sarah Marshall. So this is a breakup movie. The clue's in the title. Jason Segel cannot get over breaking up with Christian Bale. She's left him. He's a music producer. He produces on her show where she stars. It's kind of a crime scene investigation kind of thing. She leaves him for Russell Brand, again a complicated character. In this movie, back then, over 10 years ago, he played this musician who was hilarious. He was like something out of Spinal Tap. He decides that he's going to go off to Hawaii to get away from it all. It turns out she's there on holidays with the aforementioned Russell Brand. This could seem, from, you know, the back of the envelope description, like a one note kind of comedy, but it's not. It's actually pretty damn funny the whole way through. And what I love about this is just, and maybe Jason Segel's nearly too old for the character, but he's almost like a guy who's 18 or 21 when you take your relationship breaking up as, you know, it's Wagnerian. It's, I shall never love again. And he is just distraught. And then when he actually shows up on this island hoping for redemption and she turns out to be there, it's hilarious. And Mila Kunis is in there and she's absolutely delightful in it. But I think this is a great breakup movie and a movie that is hilarious for most of it, which is rare in most comedies. Any thoughts on Forgetting Sarah Marshall, either of you?
It's been a while.
I don't know if I've seen it.
Oh, great. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about Call Me By Your Name.
The worst thing that came from that film was it Get Him to the Greek?
Yeah.
Remember the spin-off?
Yeah. Oh, that should never. I think I raised that.
The Russell Brand character, yeah. I found Forgetting Sarah Marshall hilarious and kind of sad in places and lovely at the end. And Jason Segel does a whole kind of vampire puppet music.
I like the puppet stuff.
Which is very good. Yeah. I like the puppet stuff. Yeah. I'm not convincing Chris.
I definitely haven't seen this movie.
Anyway, Chris, you have chosen The Banshees of Inisherin, and people will be going, hang on, but it's about male friendship breaking up. And we were discussing a movie only 2 weeks ago called Friendship with Tim Robinson, which is all about male friendship breaking up. And, you know, I remember John Connolly, the writer, saying, you know, when Laurel and Hardy, when one of them died before the other, you can't overestimate how heartbroken when he was left behind. They had been friends since they were children and traveled the world together. And you know, male friendship and female friendship, but particularly male friendship, the idea of breakup or how important it is, hasn't always gotten the dues it deserves. Now, Banshees of Inisherin is about lots of other things as well, but I'm glad you chose this, is my long-winded way of saying that.
Yeah, it's a weird one because it's a bit of a parable of the whole kind of civil war raging on the mainland, on this thinly populated rock. Not an awful lot happens at all except for these two farmers falling out. But it is about, you know, soured brotherhood. It's about rural loneliness. It's about men's inability to communicate properly with one another, especially around that time or even still.
Yeah.
But I would totally say it is a breakup film because when these two friends played by Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson, when they do stop talking, it's a little bit like the breakdown of a relationship where this is, you know, it's uneven. One person is a bit more upset about this than the other. So Colin Farrell is playing, this was the first time that Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson were reuniting since In Bruges, which was also made by Martin McDonagh. I think this is actually McDonagh's best film and certainly his most complete. And it's set in 1923. We are on this island off the west coast of Ireland. It's the kind of place where farmers drink too much, where shopkeepers do nothing but gossip, and where the local garda will clatter you over the head if you look at them sideways. And one day, every day at 2 o'clock, Colin Farrell's column, he knocks at his friend's Padraig's house to go to the local pub run by the Dunbelievables. And that's where they stay for like the next 6 or 7 hours, just drinking themselves silly. One day Colin knocks at Padraig's door. Padraig's not there. He goes down to the pub. Padraig is already there. And Padraig won't talk to Colm. And he's wondering, what have I done? I must have...
Well, hold that thought.
If I've done something to you, just tell me what I've done to you. And if I've said something to you, maybe I said something when I was drunk and I've forgotten it. But I don't think I said something when I was drunk and I've forgotten it. But if I did, then tell me what it was. And I'll say sorry for that too, Colm. With all my heart, I'll say sorry. Just stop running away from me like some fool of a moody schoolchild.
But you didn't say anything to me. And you didn't do anything to me.
Well, that's what I was thinking, like.
I just don't like you no more.
You do like me.
I don't.
So he just doesn't like him anymore.
He doesn't like him anymore. And that is a wonderful scene just where Colin Farrell's face completely collapses at this idea. It's not even saying like, oh, I've other plans, or, oh, I just, you know, I was finished work a little bit early today, so I decided to skip down. No, I just don't want to be in your company anymore because I don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
And there's just this agonizing pause and he just can't get on board with it. Mm-hmm. So this is not going in. And then Padraig eventually has to say, look, every time that you continue to hang out with me, and this is where things get a little bit extreme, well, quite extreme.
Yeah.
Every time that you continue to bother me or pester me or drink or sit next to me, I will take a set of shears and I will remove one of my fingers. And in doing that, he will also ruin his, you know, his not his music career, but his ability to perform, because he has decided that I might not have much time left on this earth. I want to spend it making music, teaching music, being surrounded by, you know, my art. I don't want to sit here and listen to you talk about your donkey's poo for, you know, 5 hours every day. So the film is very good at approaching that sort of art over manners.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of, oh, well, it doesn't matter if I'm nice to everyone. You know, I'm very good at what I do, and that's what I'm going to concentrate on. As I said, it's this searing, sincere, and at times just devastating depiction of broken brotherhood.
Yeah.
Beautiful performances in there from Kerry Condon as Colin Farrell's character's sister. You've got Barry Keoghan in there playing the obligatory, you know, village idiot. There's kind of like the ghosts of J.M. Singh and John B. Keane hanging around. People again might be thinking that's not really about a breakup. It is.
Because
the breakup, again, with every other film in here, the breakup is at the very beginning, and then for the next 2 hours, we see what sort of impact that has on the character's lives.
Yeah, and Colin Farrell's inability to handle that breakup and process it. Yeah. Are you a fan of that? Go on, because there was a lot of, it came out, people seemed to love it, and then there's been this whole kickback of it's paddywhackery and there's donkeys and... Tell me.
I don't think it was the film for me. Okay. I'm not really a massive McDonagh fan anyway, to be honest. None of his, like, of his films have ever really worked for me at all. He did 3 billboards as well, right? So that's the same McDonagh. Yeah,
Do you not like that one?
No, I really hated it.
I love that film, but anyway.
So yeah, and I always feel maybe like I don't like Animal Sounds, but like it just didn't do anything for me.
Enough.
I went to see it with my sister and my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law, who's English, absolutely loved this film. So I think there's a thing in it that like really guys just love it. They connect with that male friendship, and like I feel bad that I don't seem to get it. Amazing cast, great setting, and I do think that the thing about a friendship breakup, we don't see that explored. And it's absolutely devastating when somebody decides, I don't want to hang out with you anymore. And you're like, okay, well, I'm officially the world's worst person and I have no idea what I did wrong. So I really did empathize with that. But I think maybe I'm just a bit, I'm not McDonough's ideal.
It's not you, it's the film. No, that's fine.
Listen, look, he's really famous and talented and people love him for a reason. But not every filmmaker, I suppose, has to be for everybody.
No, absolutely not. But I agree. Well, I liked it as a film, but its depiction of friendship breaking up is, I thought, was quite poignant. We are running way over time, so we do have time for a quick few honourable mentions. And I'm going to go to Chris's one because it kind of harkens back to what we're saying, because you talked about the male gaze, Aoife. Mm-hmm. I love the film 500 Days of Summer. My sister-in-law, who's a regular listener to this show, Aoife, says, why do not you me. Like that movie? No, sorry, Aoife, a different Aoife. Why? You're not my sister-in-law. Why do you like that movie so much? And she's like, I think it's a guy thing. So en route to you telling me why you've chosen it, Aoife, do you like 500 Days of Summer?
Again, I haven't watched it since it came out.
Okay.
I did enjoy it at the time, but I did think it maybe did have that guy's perspective. But I mean, not in an overtly terrible way or anything. It's a good crack, great soundtrack. We all were
great
kind of obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Well, we have that guy here. Yeah. No, Chris, you love 500 Days of Summer as a breakup movie? Because I do.
I loved 500 Days of Summer. When it first came out, I saw it a couple of times and I thought, oh, this is great. And I loved the structure of it. I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I kind of felt sorry for him. You know, I was rooting for him the whole time. Watched it recently and I thought, Tom, which is Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, I thought, wow, you're an idiot, and also you're annoying me. You were told at the very beginning of this relationship, which isn't actually a relationship, you were told at the very beginning by Zooey Deschanel's Summer, she is not looking for anything serious, and you have created this fantasy of her in your head, and you've created this version of her that you want it to be. You want to live in this make-believe world with Summer, but that's not how it is in the real world. And he just doesn't listen to her the whole time. And it annoyed me, John.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's weird. I don't think the film has aged all that well. It's a great looking film. Yeah. Great soundtrack. I love the way it was structured. I think it's probably the best thing that Mark Webb has ever done. And it's probably the best that Joseph Gordon-Levitt's ever been. Yeah. But it's so funny how you can love something and then go back to all those years later and think, wow, this is not the film that I remember.
I may have to rewatch that. It's interesting. Ed Smith from Upstairs was talking to me about his favourite movie, The Graduate. And he was talking about how... Now, it's not a breakup movie, but he was saying the very same thing. The Dustin Hoffman character, Benjamin, when he first saw it, he thought, this guy's cool. And, you know, all those years later, he was like... You had a summer affair with a woman who was much older, who was broken, and like, well, you're horrible. You're the ultimate anti-hero. Aoife, you wanted to mention, you've mentioned before in these shows, When Harry Met Sally, is it a breakup movie? Because, you know, there's a jolly happy ending.
Yeah, like it's kind of like a multiple breakup movie in a way. So I kind of thought of that one because I thought it's about a couple who they can't quite get it together for ages, but also their friends are going through relationships too. So I think it says a lot about trying at that, it's very 80s, very of its era at that time, trying to kind of find a relationship and keep it, and what a big challenge it is. And it's also just like, I think it gives you everything. It gives you the love affair, it gives you the yearning, gives you the breakups, gives you the dating.
It's a great film. So, there's no question about that.
It's just so good.
Thankfully, we don't have time to talk about the overblown pretentious crap that is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I did want to finally mention then the breakup with Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston. That's a great breakup movie where they have to live together after they break up, and Vince Vaughn does horrible things like bringing a stripper home. Jennifer Aniston brings a cappella into the room beside him, an a cappella choir. I think it's terrific. I'm only joking. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I just remember thinking, I'm going to love this, and I really didn't.
Yeah, Carey should have won an Oscar for that. Or at least been nominated. I am a fan.
Jim Carrey.
I am a fan of Jim Carrey, yeah. Just that idea of like two ex-lovers trying to literally erase one another from their memories. Very clever.
Clever idea. I just didn't think the execution worked on screen. Last word to Aoife before me and Chris fall out. I need him to stick around, though. Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Yeah, I think this is another one for the relationship's never going to work up. You know they're going to have to break up from day one. It stars Naomi Merlant and Adele Hanel. I think it was Adele Hanel's last role because she's left the film industry now, mainly because of the sexism that she experienced and other things. It's directed by Céline Sciamma, amazing director. It's about two women in the late 18th century in France who fall in love when one is sent kind of under subterfuge to paint the other one's portrait. And it's just like, I remember watching it with my friend and we were watching thinking, oh, this is great, this is good, whatever. And there's a moment at a bonfire where the two women kind of fall in love, and as an audience member, you fall in love with their relationship. You're like, I would die for these women. Yeah. They have to be together forever. So I just think it's beautiful. It's shot like it is a painting from the 18th century as well. It's stunning.
And their togetherness is so believable in it. And you root for them until they can't root for each other.
Yeah.
That has been a special Screen Time where we've been looking at the best breakup movies of all time. Despite the sad subject matter, we've had fun. I hope you have too. If you want to know, or if you want to tell us any of your suggestions we didn't get to, John_Fardy on Twitter, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. Next week I'll be taking a little R&R, but we will be looking at the best TV sig tunes of all time, so you can tune in for that. My thanks to arts journalist and film critic Chris Wasser, and also to arts journalist and author Aoife Barry. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and enjoy the remainder of your weekend.